Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for joining in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that is solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm Paul Marks, your host, and we have a great show today with wonderful guests who are experts on the topic of today's show. So you invest or want to invest in multifamily properties in the Houston area. How are investors finding the market right now? Are there assets available, and at what cost? With this in mind, our topic today is, what's exciting multifamily investors in Houston? Joining me in the studio is Terry Clifton, president of Better World Properties, Michael Knight, vice president of operations for Better World Properties, and Carlos Neto, independent multifamily investor and owner of 600 units in the Houston area. Thank you guys for joining in today.
Thank you.
Good to be here, Paul.
So what's the mood of multifamily investors around Houston? What are you guys hearing?
Well, I'll speak to that, Paul. We regularly see at our office folks coming in that still want to invest in multifamily. We see a lot of interest in independent investors that want to get into multifamily. They know that that's a good long-term investment, a good way to make their money work for them. So we're just seeing a lot of interest on the part of buyers, I would say more so than sellers right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll agree with that. Buyers, or there's plenty of buyers out there. There's not so many sellers.
Yeah.
Sellers want a lot of money for their property.
Which I guess we would consider Houston right now, at least with the economy, a seller's market as opposed to a buyer's market.
What I'm kind of seeing is that they're throwing a price against the wall and seeing if it'll stick, not necessarily evaluating the property and seeing whether or not it's worth it. They're hoping for outside investments to come into town and will actually gobble up all the real estate. Another thing that I'm seeing is that when they sit down and really want to talk about different areas in Houston, they all want to know those special pockets, the little gems that no one can find.
Right.
Insider information is what everybody just thrives on in the multifamily industry, obviously.
Yeah, I have some friends that wanted to make their first investment in multifamily about 6 months ago. They found a property in Spring Branch, a small property, and when they put their contract in, made their offer, they ended up going for like four times what they, you know, what they did. It was amazing to them. They felt like, what's going on with the market here?
Yeah, we regularly hear about properties that are up for sale that end up with two dozen offers on them, people that are interested in buying.
How long ago was that different? How long ago was it easier to find properties here? Was it after the downturn and the...
Yeah, after the downturn, there was excess product. Nobody wanted to... Everybody was afraid of buying. Mm-hmm. There was lots of product, not so many buyers. Prices were a quarter or a fifth of what they are today. It was very different.
Yeah. So Carlos, when you're looking for a property, what are some of the main things you look for to at least get your interest?
First of all, location, and usually I look for some kind of a value add. So I'm looking for some either management deficiency or construction deficiency, that things that we can fix. But my main focus is mostly location.
Okay.
Location is what drives me.
All right. And Michael, what are you seeing out there?
Well, I certainly agree with Carlos about location. I'll never forget buying my very first house. I bought the very best house in the neighborhood, and I wasn't able to sell it for nearly what I thought it was worth later on down the road. And I learned a good lesson then that if you're buying one of the lesser properties in a nicer area, then you've got a lot more upside potential. So that's one of the things that we definitely encourage people to look at is properties that are undervalued relative to the area around them. What is it surrounded by? Is it an up-and-coming area, and you've got something that will be valuable down the road? That's really important.
And you mentioned location. What type of areas around the city are you seeing people showing interest in?
Ooh, I see a lot of people are interested in Spring, Katy, Clear Lake. Those are all the normal we all want to buy in those areas. But there's also some additional little pockets if you go just a little bit outside of those areas in almost like a submarket where you could actually find better value because no one has run out to these little areas yet, these smaller little town areas.
Mm-hmm. How far out do you think people have to go to find those?
Well, I think any area has the potential of being a good area. You're always looking for what is the employment base in that area? What is the regulatory environment like in that area? You certainly don't want to be going way far out expecting that I'm going to attract commuters that are going to come into the center of town. You know, apartment dwellers largely like to live in areas that are relatively close to where they work or at least in a very nice area. One of the pockets that we see, I think, a lot of interest in is the Pasadena area. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is that Pasadena as a city is very much discourages new development of apartments in that area. We just don't see a lot of interest in building on the part of the city there. Mm-hmm. They make it very difficult, which means that the product that is there, it just gets closer and closer into the center of town as Houston grows, mm-hmm. and becomes more valuable in that way. So that's an area we see a lot of interest in.
Plus, there's also lots of jobs in Pasadena.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What about areas that people are trying to stay away from? I would imagine that Inside the Loop has got a lot of product available, and there are no bargains there. So what other areas?
Rough areas, crime areas like Greens Point, for the most part, is a place that most people stay away from.
I would say also just kind of south, the Hobby Airport area, which is surprising because you can see that they're trying to invest a lot of money into its infrastructure, but it just kind of hasn't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. So it's very risky.
Yeah, one of the telltale signs we see is when you have a police storefront on your property.
Yeah,
some people say, well, you know, that's a real benefit because people can feel safer here. On the other hand, people that are moving into the area, as soon as you see a police storefront on the front of a property, that really suggests something to you about the quality of that area. So I think a lot of it does have to do with where is the crime, where is that coming from, what does that look like?
And from an investor standpoint, I guess, that's part of the intangible due diligence that you need to do. It's not actually property specific, but area specific to when you're looking at a property.
Well, ultimately, the way you make money on apartments is by having that property be more valuable down the road than it is when you buy that. And you can control a certain amount of that by what you invest into the property. But a fair amount of that is going to be driven by the market around you. And if that area is not dynamic and growing and new families moving in and improvements being made, then you're going to have a tough time increasing the value of that property down the road. Would you agree with that, Carlos?
Yeah. How desirable is a location at the mm-hmm. end of the day? How much do people want to live there or not want to live there?
You also have to factor in management, whether or not the property is being operated by a professional management company or a professional owner that knows what they're doing. You can be sitting in an area that has a lot of potential, but if your competitors are really not performing, then you absolutely could have an opportunity to go in there and increase the value of the property that you're going to take over and you're going to manage. Mm-hmm. I see that happen quite a bit with our value adds and our professional management style.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it, obviously. How you manage a property, when you take over a property, for instance, I'm sure have to kind of look at your resident mix and see where you have good eggs and bad eggs and what you need to do to clean up the property from that standpoint.
Oh, Paul, that starts way in the due diligence process. Mm-hmm. Before you even take the property over, what you do is you have a professional management team that comes in and they actually evaluate the market. They go through the unit-by-unit inspection, do lease file audits. They actually do crime statistics in the area, the environmental, the taxes on a deal, insurance. I mean, there's a lot of things happening from the time that you actually decide you're going to purchase a piece of real estate. And then by the time it's closing and you have that management company coming in and taking it over, and actually they've already developed a plan. They've already communicated with ownership what their exit strategy is going to be. So we already know what's going to happen and what's around us and what the area is doing or not doing when we get to that, to the point of taking it over. We're ready to start performing.
Yeah. Definitely agree with that, that due diligence is really all about the neighborhood as much as the property itself.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be right back after these messages. We are going to take a quick break, but before we do, I want to let our listeners know that you can always go to the website for the radio show at www.multifamilyradio.com to listen to any archived episode, as well as provide suggestions for topics and guests. We'll be back right after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen and Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call eConserve today at 713-662-3220 for a free analysis of your property. That's eConserve at 713-662-3220. Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Well, welcome back to Multifamily Matters. I am Paul Marks, your host. Today in the studio, we are talking about what's exciting multifamily investors in Houston. Joining me is Terry Clifton, president of Better World Properties, Michael Knight, vice president of operations for Better World Properties, and Carlos Neto, independent multifamily investor and the owner of 600 units in the Houston area. We're talking a little bit last segment about due diligence, and you know that's obviously a step that an investor or someone would have to go through when they're purchasing a multifamily property, or should go through to really understand about the property and get some guidance on if it is a good investment for them. Tell us a little bit about what's involved in that. What do you guys look for, and also why is it important to bring in some professionals if you're a passive investor and maybe out-of-town investor? Why is it important to have people with boots on the ground?
Well, Paul, I can kind of take you through a little bit about what we do with due diligence. We get a lot of investors that ask us to help them evaluate a property. So we go in and with the team and we do a pretty deep dive. Everybody knows that you want to walk through all of the units, of course, and you want to look through all the lease files and see what's really there. But what I think is really interesting is when we start looking around the neighborhood and the position of that property within that neighborhood, one of the great tools that I like to use is to go into Google Earth. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows you can get an aerial view. But if you go into certain programs, you can get historical aerial views of that property. And sometimes you can go back decades. It's amazing what they've got on the internet now. We did a property recently where we took it all the way back to 1943 when the property was just prairie and fields, and then saw how everything developed around there. And it gives you a much better sense of what's going on in that area when you start looking at some of the history of it. So I like looking at the history. We also like really looking at things like retail, grocery stores. Some of these properties, Terry mentioned a while ago, Greens Point is one of the tougher areas in town. One of the reasons that it is a tough area is it's very much a grocery desert around there. There just isn't a lot of retail for people to work with, and particularly people that are taking lower rent apartments, you know, maybe vehicle challenged. In a city like Houston, where we were so car dependent, having that retail, and a lot of people talk about a walkability score, I think those things are very important.
Okay.
I think your exterior is very important. It can tell a lot of signs when you're walking around the exterior of the buildings, and you actually can tell anything from foundation issues to moisture penetration to basically liabilities, exterior lighting. A lot of that, what you have to have is you have to have good bones and good structure to work with. I mean, you can replace some rotted wood, but if your stucco is rotted behind it and it's getting ready to fall off the building, you know going in that it's going to take a lot more money up front. And so you prepare your investment group for that. So I think that that's one of the major things that you should look for. Drainage, that all, drainage is so important. We all know that in the city of Houston. And of course, signs that water penetration has actually gotten into the buildings from prior periods. There's a lot of people that like to fix the property up prior to putting it on the market. But if you don't have the experience that's necessary to be able to see through those things, you could end up investing in something that is a mess.
Terry talked about the bones in the property. We did a property recently built in the 60s, I believe, and the owner knew going in that they were going to have to put a lot of money into the property to make it really nice. And he did that, made it very beautiful, but the bones of the property were such that the units, after they were fixed up, still did not have washer and dryer. They did not have dishwashers, and they didn't have disposals. And it turns out that it was extremely difficult to rent at the kind of rents that he needed to make money on that property, given those limitations, which were very structural to the property. On the other hand, we looked at a property recently that was similar vintage, but several decades ago, the ownership had put $4.5 million into the property and actually rewired it with individual meters and put in new sewer lines so that all the units had washer dryer. To this day, that's paying benefits for it. So those are some of the things we want to look for. And Carlos, you got a property just recently that you picked up. What were some of the things that you saw that you really liked or were challenged with in looking at that property?
There was no real challenges. It's a good location. It's a stable property. It has good bones. It was at an attractive price. It has a land use restriction agreement on it, so rents were limited for the next few years, and I thought it was an opportunity to have a smaller cash flow now, but in the future get a significant amount of value added to the property and increase the cash flow. It was being operated well. But yeah, I mean, the amenities that our people are looking for today are different than the 60s. So if you don't have the washer and dryer connections, but you can convert and add them in, that's an important item to be able to add in some of the other ones you're talking about.
And you mentioned that property had some land use restrictions. How long till those burn off?
About 4 years.
That's interesting that you say that. We're seeing several buyers that we've talked to recently that are doing a similar thing of looking at what we just generally term affordable housing, which has a land use restriction agreement that requires the rents to be limited on that property. And those agreements run for, oh gosh, what is it, 15 years initially, and then another 15 years on top of that. So 30-year agreements, just kind of a forever. But if you're looking ahead a little bit and you're seeing that that's going to burn off in 5-7 years, we're seeing some people picking up
property. And it's already in a good market.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then you've got a whole new opportunity ahead of you.
One of the things that I've noticed is, you know, obviously there are different kinds of buyers. I work with a company out of Florida that has, they're an investment company, but they'll look for value add properties. They bought several here in town, but their whole strategy is they want to just basically do some cosmetic, you know, repairs, fix it up a little bit, and then they flip it within 2 years. And then, you know, Carlos, what you were saying is you've got at least 4 years before you're restrictions go away, so you're into it for a longer hold. What are you seeing now as far as hold strategies of folks, and what's the benefits of both ways?
It's very diversified. What's important in the beginning of your relationship with the buyers or your investment group is knowing what the overall strategy is going to be. We have seen 3 to 5 year holds. We currently have 10-year holds, 15-year holds. It depends, and it also tells you what you're going to actually do with that asset. If you're holding something 3 to 5 years, your decision to replace is going to be a little different than if you're holding it 2 years or if you're holding it 10 years. If you're holding it 10, absolutely, we're gonna replace it. We're going to do the right thing. But a 2 year hold, we're going to repair or rebuild. So it we're seeing it all over the board. It's an individual investment group strategy, mm-hmm. wouldn't you say, Carlos?
Yeah, I kind of feel that the people that are longer-term holds are the local people, and the ones that come from out of town are just, like you said, they come in for 2 or 3 years, 4 years, and try to flip it and make as much money as quick as possible and move on to the next project.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the strategy when you have a longer-term hold on a project is a little bit different from the standpoint of being able to use the resources that are available to fix the property up in certain ways. You give our listeners an example of some things if you held a property longer that you'd look at doing versus if it was a shorter term property.
Number one, boiler replacement. Mm-hmm. You would absolutely longer term, you'd replace it versus repair or rebuild. Roof replacement versus roof repairs. Siding repairs versus siding replacement. Overall drainage, plumbing. I mean, the major items that are big ticket items are determined based on your hold. Mm-hmm. The small things everybody does, the value add, obviously everybody wants to, but you're not going to go in and install granite countertops if you're looking to flip it in 2 years and the market is allowing you to resurface countertops.
Right, right.
Yeah, I would say the materials you choose are a completely different set of materials, whether it's 5 year to 10 year hold, the durability of the materials, the quality of the materials that you pick.
And I guess the market determines really what's acceptable or what's not acceptable when it comes to either resurfacing or putting back in some type of a different type of surface.
Well, that goes back to your early due diligence period, where it is so important, everyone, to do a due diligence on the property prior to investing your money or other people's money into it, because your market is going to mandate it. And if you're sitting in a market that mandates granite countertops and you're not going to be able to get that rent increase after you're installing them, then you need to rethink the deal.
Mm-hmm. And how many times during a due diligence, and we're going to take a break in just a second, but how many times during a due diligence do you find out that the deal's not a good deal? What's your batting average that you see out there?
Well, I always like to say that every deal can be a good deal as long as the numbers are right and you're buying it at the right price going mm-hmm. in. So a lot of it is really about determining, is that price that I'm proposing to pay for this property the correct price once I get in there and see what really needs to be done? And very oftentimes it's a matter of having to go back and retrade the deal if you find something that's sort of a deal killer. Mm-hmm. We were looking at one the other day where there was a new facade put on the property, and the challenge was trying to understand what was underneath that facade, if it was rotted or something else. So
right.
A lot of things to look for.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. We're going to be back after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. EconServe has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call EconServe today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's EconServe at 713-662-3220. Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Well, we're back, and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing what's exciting multifamily investors in Houston. Joining me in the studio are Terry Clifton, president of Better World Properties, Michael Knight, vice president of operations for Better World Properties, and Carlos Neto, an independent multifamily investor and the owner of 600 units in the Houston area. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. Econserve, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. Rasa Floors, the professional flooring advisor specializing in make-ready replacement flooring for multifamily industry throughout Texas and Oklahoma. WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management. And Ted W. Allen & Associates, specializing in multifamily habitational insurance since 1967. We were talking about due diligence last segment. I want to just jump back on that for a couple of minutes. We discussed some stories that we had heard about people having flying bats in their attics and having to get them professionally relocated because they were protected by law. And pest control or extermination is an important thing as far as in our area with termites as well. What do you guys do when you go on a due diligence?
Yeah, a couple of things on pests that we're really, really looking for. One, of course, termites. Best of all worlds is that property has a termite agreement that is a perpetual type of an agreement. And once you see that they have that, you can feel pretty confident that they're not having a major termite problem. Termites are not that hard to spot, so you certainly want to be looking for those. Rodents are something that can really plague a property. To find out if they have rodents, we always like going looking on their social media. You'll hear all about them
right.
Just by looking up property up on social media. If the property is surrounded by fields and ditches, tend to have bigger problem than if you're surrounded by parking lots. Certainly the condition of the units is an issue. The one that's always the really biggie is bed bugs. If a property has had bed bug problems in the past, they tend to be very, very difficult to eradicate completely. So if they've got an ongoing issue with that, we certainly want to know about it because that gets real expensive in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, but the bed bugs, what will happen is if one of the residents actually bring them home with them, they will actually travel through the electrical outlets on into the next apartment. So when you're treating a particular one apartment, you're looking at pretty much all four surrounding apartments that need to be treated. So it becomes a very expensive, very, very long process because you've got to make sure that you get them gone. We took over a property about 6-8 months ago and ended up having to treat entire buildings because they had gotten into the buildings through the outlets and on people's shoes, and so it was very expensive for that new client.
Wow. And if residents don't cooperate, it's very hard to do. So it requires a major effort to get rid of them.
How do you get the residents to cooperate?
Sometimes you don't. You have to get rid of them. There's no options.
Yeah, sometimes you have to make a move. Yeah. And it's difficult for them because it does require them to clean all their clothing. It requires them to pretty much throw out most of their stuff. And so it's very difficult to get them to cooperate. And sometimes it's unfortunate, but sometimes the best way to do that is to ask them to move along.
Yeah. I've not heard that yet, but that could be very expensive, and also expensive as far as your lease rolls too.
Well, it was very expensive for this particular client that we took over. We were doing buildings of bed bugs. So not only were we having to ask residents to move, we were having to incur the expense of doing the treatment, because typically if you do not have bed bugs and you have someone that comes in and moves in with bed bugs, you ask them to absorb the cost of the treatment. And a lot of times they will. They don't like to, reluctantly, but they will. But having entire buildings where residents are just basically having to move out, you've got your vacancy loss going on, plus the expense of having to treat it and get rid of them so that you can do your turn and put it back on the market.
And heaven forbid those should show up on social media.
Yeah.
I had a supervisor friend that told me that she had to take one of her buildings down to the studs. They couldn't get rid of them. They had to get everybody out, take all the sheetrock out, take everything out of the building.
So you can imagine during the due diligence phase how important it is to have an exterminator. Another major expensive item that you need to be paying attention to is plumbing, the plumbing lines, and having a plumber come out. What I'm seeing, a lot of buyers now are willing to actually come out, and before they even purchase, as long as they're under contract, they'll actually do jetting of a couple of buildings, which benefits the seller because their lines are now clean, but it also allows the buyer to take a look for any kind of bellies in the lines, any kind of lines that are cracked or basically have been had roots growing through them. So I'm seeing a lot of that. Another thing I'm seeing is it's very important that you have your roofs inspected. Just because they look pretty from the ground does not mean that they're not leaking everywhere. Mm-hmm. So as you do your interior due diligence, you look at the ceilings and you look to see if there are windows leaking and that kind of stuff. But it's very important. Do not try to be an expert on roofs. Make sure that you get a roofer up there.
That was another one that came to mind. We were talking about fire control. In Montgomery County right now, there is some noise being made about having to retrofit older apartments with fire alarm systems. And that is really a decision that the county fire marshal or the local fire marshal is allowed to make by state law, is my understanding. So right now, we grandfather older apartments generally in the Harris County and the greater Houston area. So you buy an older apartment, you want to have fire alarm or fire smoke detectors, I should say, in the units, and fire extinguishers, of course. But a fire alarm system is certainly another matter. And so if your municipality or county makes you come back in and retrofit with an entire fire alarm system, that gets real, real expensive. So when you're buying a property, you want to make sure that you know going into it, am I going to have to do that or am I not? And hopefully the law doesn't change on you halfway through.
Right.
Well, and one of the ways to do that is make sure that you're asking for their life safety certificates. That's very important because that lets you know that the fire marshal has already came through. He's absolutely accepted the building in its current condition. And so just make sure that you have your life safety report.
You know, I've been to a due diligence exercise. I call it exercise. It's really not an exercise, but that Better World did. And it's very impressive and very thorough. What's the time frame typically that you guys spend when you're doing due diligence from the standpoint of, I guess, from the time you're given the okay to move forward with it once the property's under contract to the time you complete it and get to the process saying, okay, this is the decision we're going to make?
There's a couple of phases to it. Certainly a certain amount of preparation goes into it to just gather all the materials, and the seller should be required to provide substantial amount of documentation, and that's pretty well understood. When you get out to the property itself, our rule of thumb is that one team of 2 to 3 people can walk 75 units per day. So you want one maintenance person with you to key the units. We like using 3. One takes pictures, one writes stuff down, and one does the inspecting. And it shouldn't take you more than a couple of minutes to go through a unit and look at the key items. And then we have another team that we use in the office to look at lease files. And we figure that a team of 2 people can typically get through about 150 lease files in a day. And what you're doing there, of course, is we're looking at the rent roll that's provided by the seller, and we're matching that up with the documentation that's in the file, because the number that is on that lease form is what rules the day.
We've run into during due diligence, and Paul, by the way, exercise is the right word, because when you're walking up and down those stairs,
you get a lot of exercise.
You get a lot of exercise. So exercise is the right word.
Right.
But one of the things that over and over we'll find is that a rent roll coming from the computer system is actually different as far as the rental rates that the lease contract is stating, as well as the security deposits. And that's so hugely important when it comes down to the closing, right, Carlos? I'm sure you've experienced that, where the rent roll is saying something entirely different from the leases, and the seller has got to produce the total amount of security deposits per those documents.
Yeah, I agree. And you're basing your income off of the rent roll, so you have to make sure that those leases say the same as the rent roll, so you're income is accurate, because that's the base of evaluating the project.
And we find that to be different quite a bit. So that's one of the things that you really have to pay attention.
Yeah.
But we also like looking at fees. One of the things that's very interesting to us is when we do the unit walkthroughs, we actually look for pets, cats and dogs, and we count them up. And increasingly we find, you know, a lot of people are interested in collecting pet rent and pet fees. But when you look at the end result, there's usually somewhere between 25% and 50% of the pets are actually accounted for on the rent rolls. In other words, there are a whole lot of pets in the properties that people are typically not collecting money for.
Yeah.
So you have to think about that.
All right. Well, we're out of time on this segment. We are going to be back with our last segment after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen and Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we're back with our final segment of Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing what's exciting multifamily investors in Houston. I am Paul Marks, and joining me in the studio, Terry Clifton, President of Better World Properties, Michael Knight, Vice President of Operations for Better World Properties, and Carlos Neto, an independent multifamily investor and owner of 600 units in our area here in Houston. We talked the last segment about due diligence, and there's just one point I wanted to ask, because you gave a lot of good information to our listeners, and you were talking about having teams of three people to walk properties and team of two people to go through the leases, and you could do 75 units a day to walk the properties, 150 leases a day. On a 200-unit property, you've spent 3 days of time just on property, and that does, I mean, that's including, I guess, coordinating with contractors and folks that you want to bring in. Mm-hmm. But then what is the back room time frame? When you get all that information, you gather it, how long does it take you to compile it into a report?
So that's just the on-site portion that you're referring to. After that, we usually find, it, of course, it depends on the property size, but there's usually about 2 weeks of work in the back office to do additional research. Anything that we turf up during the on-site due diligence, oftentimes we have to follow up on that. There's a lot of research into things like tax records and the crime statistics of the area, and then just matching up the numbers that come out of the rent roll and what we're being told by the seller with what we've actually viewed on the property. So looking at all that, summarizing all of that, about 2 weeks worth of effort to do that.
Well, right. additional work now has become the social media, the new curb appeal. And so you've got to go through each and every advertisement that they've ever used that's out there online. You've got to find out what the residents are talking about, because there could be hidden things that you didn't quite see, like the infestation of bed bugs. You're going through a market analysis, because what you need to do is determine, can the rental rates be increased for the value add that you're doing. So there's a lot of online research that has to be done. And also, while you're on the property for that 3 days, it kind of gives you a good sense of feel of the resident profile. Even though you're checking out the leases and the applications and going through that thoroughly, once you start putting all that data together and you're creating these spreadsheets, it kind of starts to create a picture of its overall resident profile. Mm-hmm. And so you can see in that picture whether you can take that resident profile to its next level, or is the area around it, because you're doing your area analysis as well, is it not quite ready for it to cycle?
Mm-hmm. Another thing that somebody like Terry, with so much depth of knowledge of the apartment business in Houston, can do is you don't have to look very far to find other apartment professionals that are familiar with that property or that have actually worked at the property and give you a lot of great inside information about what's going on with that property.
Yeah.
So that's always very useful.
And I think, Terry, what you said about the digital curb appeal, that's a whole different set of due diligence that wasn't part of the industry years ago. I mean, that's something that's relatively new in the last decade, I guess.
Yes. Well, in my 30-plus years, we didn't have to worry about online presence. Now I like to call it the new curb appeal. Online presence is your new curb appeal, because they're going to, before they even bother to drive down the street to see the pretty little flowers on the side of the curb and no trash and everything perfect, they're already going to check out everything that everyone has ever said about you, any pictures that have been posted anywhere. So you've got to make sure that you can either rebrand or overcome that profile that's been created for that property. So yeah. If you have a management in place that doesn't care about their social media or online presence, and you have residents that are not being taken care of, it could ruin a property.
And that's how that really translates, is what Tara was alluding to. Do we need to rebrand the property and go to the time and trouble and expense of giving it a new name and giving it a new reputation? And sometimes that's very worthwhile if that past reputation is just so horrible. It's a very expensive can be an expensive proposition to rebrand a property. But again, as long as you know it going in up front on the due diligence, then that's where the deal's won and lost, isn't it, Carlos?
Absolutely. Price cures everything.
And speaking of price, that's what I want to jump on, because we're talking about investors purchasing properties. What are we seeing price-wise in the Houston area as far as that goes? Cap rates determine that. So where are we right now?
Well, a lot of people focus on cap rates, and that's obviously a very important indicator for our industry. We tend to kind of focus on price per unit. We just have a good gut feel for, in any particular area of town, what's a price per unit, an appropriate price based on the class of property and where that property is located. It's always very difficult to get good price information. A lot of people don't disclose that, you know, for obvious reasons, particularly tax reasons. Mm-hmm. But there is a little bit of information out there. Transwestern does a pretty good job of gathering up all the sales each quarter. They typically get published in the Houston Business Journal. And you look at some of the prices there, and then you start looking at price per unit, because that's what you can translate there. And you'll see anything from $56,000 a unit to $125,000 or $140,000 a unit. And we're always interested in looking at those numbers relative to the properties and what we kind of know about those areas and those properties and say, you know, where's that going? Are people paying the right amount? Are they overpaying, the underpaying? And in any data set, we can always pick out some where we say, wow, that person really got a heck of a deal. And then other ones where they say, we can easily say, gee, I think they're going to have a real tough time making a go of it at that kind of number. They're all over the board. There's no consistency from what I see of price per unit. What do you see, Cardinals?
I agree. You're only talking about up to 130 or 120 a door. That's only the older stuff. You're not talking about inner city new construction, where it's $200,000 and $300,000 a door. Yeah. Prices are high. Prices are very high. You really need to make a good run at it to make sure your numbers are right.
I mean, it's not been that many years ago that we thought $45,000 a unit was a big number for apartments. We just saw about 1,000 units in the Spring Branch area trade at about $60,000 a unit, and we just thought we'd never see numbers like that in that kind of area. So,
What have you seen early in your career, Terry? Where was the average price?
Oh, my goodness.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Back in 2008, when we purchased a property, we purchased it all in with our $2.3 million rehab for $28,000 a door.
Wow.
And so about 6 years later, we sold it for $55,000 a door. I could actually relate to that in today's times, and I could easily see it going for $65,000 to $70,000 a door.
Because there are so many buyers out there relative to the number of sellers, we definitely have a fear that prices will get driven up beyond what is really reasonable. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, it's how much rent can you get out of that unit? And there's only so much rent that people are able to pay anywhere. And you start bidding up the prices. Some people get so worked up about, I've got to do a deal, or you've got 1031 exchange money that you've got to place somewhere. And we've seen that happen. We've seen one buyer that we worked with that frankly overpaid for the properties because he was so desperate to place his money and ended up with some real financial problems.
Right. How important is the broker when it comes to helping you determine what you're going to do with a deal? I mean, they're obviously interested in the deal selling and you buying. So,
well, and that's you hit on the nail on the head there with the kind of the danger with brokers and the opportunity with brokers. Brokers can be very good with helping sellers understand what's that property really worth and what can I really get for the property and so forth. But we all have to remember that brokers make their money by doing deals. It's kind of like stockbrokers. They don't really care at the end of the day whether the deal is up, down, good, bad, or indifferent. It's can I make the deal happen and at whatever number. So their interest is not always getting the buyer the best deal. They're certainly interested in getting the seller a good price because that drives their commission. So I hate to sound real negative about brokers because, you know, brokers are a very important part of the equation, and there are a lot of great brokers out there that do a lot of good things for the industry and kind of keep us all straight and in line with those numbers.
But and keep in mind, brokers most of the time are representing the seller, not the buyer.
Right, right.
So you have to, be sharper.
Well, since we've talked about brokers, I'm going to have some brokers on the show next time to let them state their case.
Yeah,
that's okay. That's okay. So in kind of summing up pricing right now, tips that you could give somebody who's thinking about investing, what type of things do they need to know when it comes to looking at pricing?
Ask the experts.
Yeah.
And the expert is not necessarily the broker that is selling the property. Ask some other owners, other people around, see what other properties are trading at. Get that insider information is going to be probably your best bet.
Make sure you understand your underwriting and what you are underwriting you can actually perform at.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely team up with a professional management company so that they can take you through the due diligence process and kind of start identifying your plan and where you're seeing your underwriting. Obviously you're trying to get to a certain rental rate well, you need to make sure that you're with a professional company that actually knows the submarket, knows whether or not those rental rates are achievable. You can do your underwriting, Carlos, and not put the right rental rates in there, and they're not obtainable.
That's part of the underwriting. That's what
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. And then you end up in trouble because you close this deal, you promise a return to all of our investors, and now all of a sudden the rental rates are not achievable. So in the beginning, it's just so important that you start with a professional group, a team that is proven, they have experience, they know what they're doing, so that they can kind of walk through and talk through your performa and where you see this asset and where you see its returns going, and tell them what your plan is in the beginning. I've worked for a few owners in my career that didn't let the management know what their plan was. And so we're out there making decisions for them, thinking they're a long-term hold. And reality was they were either the two-year flippers or they were the 3 to 5. And we're not making the best decisions to help you achieve your goals.
I think the best example of that is we got an investment group out of New York that is fabulous with spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. And they've got all the data and all the numbers in the world. And the more we've worked with them and Terry's worked with them, they finally figured out, you know, the best thing to do, call Terry and say, what's that property worth over there?
Right.
Is this number that I'm thinking about, does it make any sense at all?
Right.
And when you've been doing it for 30 years like Terry has, you just have a gut feeling for, yes, that'll work, and no, that won't work.
Well, not only that, when they're calling, I'm saying, oh, I managed that before. Oh, this, I'm on my second or third time managing it. So let me tell you, I had it way back.
Ask the experts.
Well, before we close out the show, I want to give everybody a chance to let our listeners know how they can get in touch with you. Tell us a little bit about your companies, and then we're going to say goodbye.
Okay. Well, I'm Terry Clifton, president of Better World Properties. I'm going to let Michael tell you all about our company because he's really great at that.
Well, we're just all about helping people that want to be in the multifamily business. We try to be an end-to-end solution for folks so that you're thinking about an investment, rehabbing, leasing up, selling the investment, whatever it is, that's what we're here to help people with. You can find us on the web at betterworldllc.com or give us a call anytime. We're easy to find.
Okay. Carlos?
Yeah, Carlos Neto. I'm a local owner-operator. My email is carlos@gtxcap.com.
And I will say Carlos is all over the industry, so he's always willing to help folks.
Great. Well, thank you guys so much for coming in. I appreciate it. I think it was a great show. We will be back next Friday and each and every Friday at 10 a.m. with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.